Well, good morning. As already been said, it's nice and sunny and warm today. It's a great thing. And once again, I'd like to thank you for the privilege of being here to bring you a message. My prayer is that this is coming from the Spirit's wisdom and not anything from me, and it will challenge you to a stronger relationship with God. As you know, we've been working through a series, and I don't know if those guys knew it or not, but I'm thinking ahead a few months. I'm thinking of talking in my next series about Joseph. We've been in a series for many months now, Jesus and. And today, I begin the wrap-up. Another couple of 3 months, I think, but I'm getting to some of the real meatier things now, I think. And today, we're going to talk about prayer. Earlier, downstairs, we talked about what's commonly called the Lord's Prayer, but might better be described as the disciples' prayer. It was given by Jesus as a model for us when he was asked by his disciples to teach them to pray. I think they were a little like us, in that they knew in their hearts they wanted and needed to pray, but they didn't know how to accomplish it. They didn't have the right tools. So they asked Jesus, how should we pray? What is prayer all about anyway? I'm going to give you a couple of examples that I would say are poor examples, and then I'm going to switch to Jesus, who gives you a better example. Atheists, and you can Google this if you Google prayer and milk jug, have some things in which they say, and it's mostly, I think, to ridicule Christians, that praying to God might as well be praying to a milk jug, because there's only 2.5 answers that he gives. One is yes, one is no, and the other one is, you'll learn about this later. And their argument is that you can do the same thing with a milk jug. I don't know why they didn't choose a whisk broom or something else, but they chose milk jug. I don't know if there's any in Ontario that have redone it in its bags, but the point is their argument, for which they say there is no God, is because we can do the same thing with any inanimate object. Well, that's not that different from a lot of ancient religions and even some places in the world today. Or, I had a friend. He was a Christian. His claim was that prayers didn't go anywhere past the ceiling. He would pray. But his argument was that prayer was only about changing us. And I think maybe there's some basis in truth in that, because prayer does change us, or should change us. After all, if we've come out of a prayer and we've not had a change of heart, I question whether we're really in prayer at all. Prayer is, at its very core, an emotional and a passionate endeavor. But if we feel the power in opening up ourselves to God, is it not the case that God will also open up to us? He invented emotions. He invented sharing them with his children. If there's a superhero of prayer, it's got to be Jesus. And superheroes are all the rage right now, right? Time and time again, we see him facing his most monumental joys, his hardest tasks, and his deepest sorrows by communing with God in prayer. So I'm going to do something a little different today. I won't even refer to the reading today, except to say that, remember, at the end of this, Jesus was praying for you. We saw that in the reading this morning. I'm going to go through and take a look at examples in Jesus' life where he prayed, and why he prayed, and what he prayed. It's a long list, and I don't want to make it just a checklist. If you want those passages, I'm happy to email them to you, the list of them afterwards. But I want you to see the big picture, to see Jesus and how prayer was intimately inside his life. So what were some of the events that we saw recorded as causing Jesus to turn to prayer? And I really think that we don't have but a small sampling of his prayers, but I do think we have enough to really encourage us to pray in similar situations. Well, first of all, Jesus prayed before he ate. Matthew 14 and 19. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. Or Luke 24, 30 through 31. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. Well, this practice of praying before meals has come down to us as perhaps one of the 2 or 3 prayers that even nominal Christians regularly practice, and even if they don't have a deeper prayer life. And we might consider it kind of a lightweight for that very reason. It might be the same rote prayer every time when we sit down. But consider why it was important to Jesus. It was his thank you to his Father for giving he and his followers the simple fuel to power their bodies. But even in that moment, it was to teach them that adoration of the Father for the things he was giving, whether that was multiplied food or an understanding that he had risen. Their eyes were opened after Jesus prayed. It was about giving honor due to the Father. He prayed when he was weary. Mark chapter 6. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw such a large crowd, he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late." And skipping down, now picking up in verse 46 if you were reading the other part. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. This is Mark's rendition of the same story we read from Matthew a couple of minutes ago, the feeding of the 5,000 men. We might be inclined, after the demands of a long day, to say, "We need some downtime," or "I need me time." Think how Jesus felt here. Apparently, they hadn't had any lunch in the other town, and they tried to get away by crossing the sea, and yet the people all appeared. And we read that he had compassion on them. And it was late. Yet after taking care of those 15 or 20,000 people, I don't know in total because it says 5,000 men, he found his strength in communing with God. Likewise, we read that when he was hungry after fasting in the desert and being tempted by the devil, he replied, "That is the words of God that bring life." And prayer is the time to hear God's words. He prayed before important decisions. Luke chapter 6 and verse 12. "One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles." And Luke chapter 9, beginning in 18. "Once when Jesus was praying in private and his disciples were with him, he asked them, Who do the crowds say I am? Jumping down to 21, Jesus strictly warned them not to tell this to anyone. And he said, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. When he was facing any difficult decision, Jesus turned to prayer. In the first situation, Luke records that Jesus went out onto the mountain and he prayed all night. He was about to choose his disciples from those that would be his closest companions. He knew what lay ahead for them. Tradition tells us martyrdom for most of them, exile for at least one, and that one would ruin his internal relationship with God for a few pieces of silver. That must have been a hard decision. And Luke records he spent the entire night as a result. In the second passage that we looked at, Luke also records that it was after prayer that Jesus began to tell the disciples the full impact of what he had to do. Can you imagine the stress as he considered this revelation to them? We know he told them at least three times that he had to suffer and die and be raised. This was the first one. Mark even records that he said this plainly, but they still didn't get it. I think his prayer was more for these lost sheep than for himself. Jesus prayed often. We've already seen that he prayed all night. Mark adds in Mark 1:35, very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. So not only did he spend nights in prayer to God, he got up before everybody else did and went out and began days with prayer. It's recorded that children were brought to him for blessing, Matthew 19 and verse 13. Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. And the Hebrew writer records that throughout his life he prayed. During the days of Jesus' life on earth, Hebrews 5 verse 7, he offered up prayers and petition with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverent submission. Late at night, early in the morning. Children blessed by him. And the Hebrew writer telling us that he was heard. Now we're going to get to that again because the atheists and their milk jug would argue against that. Solitude was sometimes a key component of his prayer. Luke 5:16. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Matthew 26 and 36. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. There's a communion with God that can only happen in private. Jesus modeled that being alone with God in a place without distraction is critical to some of the deepest prayers. We already seen that he went out into the wilderness and prayed all night. Did he have words that whole time? I, for one, don't think so. He was opening himself to God to receive as much or more as he was giving. And in his instructions, to his disciples on prayer, he encourages them to go to their closet and be alone with God. There's a time when we have to have solitude in order to spend time with God. His prayers were passionate, yet were prayed for God's will to be done. He wasn't afraid to pray for his own situation. We read in Hebrews Matthew chapter 26. He took Peter, the beginning of verse 37, and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Facing his death and his separation from his Father was Jesus' most deepest, cruelest time of crisis. And don't get me wrong, he prayed fervently for removal from this trial. It goes on and repeats that he asked a second time. He longed for another solution that did not force him to be apart from his God. But in the end, it was God's plan that needed fulfillment, and he was willing to do that. Non-believers might say that the Hebrews writer's comments were not valid. He didn't get listened to. He still went to the cross. How was he heard if God did not rescue him from that fate? But the believer understands he was heard. God sent angels to strengthen him. And God never stopped loving him because he was willingly carrying it through. So what did Jesus pray for? What was the object of his prayer? Well, first of all, he prayed for others. John chapter 11 and verse 42. "I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." And Luke chapter 22, verses 31 through 33. "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers." At Lazarus' tomb, he calls the people to God and away from himself. He prayed for faith to grow in Peter, that he would stand in the face of his fears and be able to help others. Jesus' prayers were always directed to the good of others. And this is a segue into the next thought. He prayed for God's kingdom and God's dream to be realized and called us to the same. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 10. "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Matthew chapter 9 and verse 38. "Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Nothing was more important to Jesus than that souls be won and God's dream realized. We can still pray that same prayer because God still moves in our world. And finally, and possibly most importantly, his prayers were his personal relationship with God, and he worshiped God in those communications. John chapter 12 and verse 28. "Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." Luke chapter 23, verses 44 through 47. "It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, 'Father, into your hands I commit my spirit.' When he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, 'Surely this was a righteous man.'" In his very last act of his life, Jesus prays to his Father, "Receive him back after his death." I easily found references to Jesus in prayer in every gospel and lots of the letters. And this is the first of two key things I want you to take from this today. Prayer was integral to Jesus' life. It wasn't an afterthought. Early in the morning, late at night, in the midst of the crowds, or in private prayer. Prayer defined Jesus. Unlike the atheists who believe there's nothing on the other end of that line, Jesus understood that this was his communication with his Father. Unlike my friend who thought that it's only about us being changed, Jesus understood that God would respond to him. The second thing I want you to understand today, or to take out of this, is that prayer is all about communication and relationship with God. Bob said earlier after our class, it's the only way we have to talk to God. And I think he's absolutely right. A man by the name of J.I. Packer wrote this: if you are a Christian, you pray, and the recognition of God's sovereignty is the basis of your prayers. I'd go even farther. As Michael mentioned about sitting around a table, last month, and the relationship building that we have, that to me is a key part of prayer. It's not only our joy, it's our right to talk to God and worship him in this fashion.